everybody, happy Valentine's Day. And so much love to all of you. I'm so thrilled that you're here or listening in on the replay. And I want to welcome you to the Love Summit 2014, your place for igniting more passion, connection, fun, and love in your life starting now. I'm your host, Linda Kroll, and I am thrilled beyond words to bring you this incredible lineup of 20 amazing love and relationship experts over the next 4 days. We have thousands of people from all over the world who have signed up for this collective evolution of sharing more love. And whether you're in a relationship that you'd like to see improve, or you're hoping to find your soulmate sometime soon, you may want better relationship with your family, your friends, your children, your parents, your coworkers. As I said on the video, it all begins with love, and it starts with loving yourself. And I need to tell you, my effusion factor is kind of over the moon. Effusion, I looked up, is an unrestrained outpouring of feelings. And I tend to effuse when I'm happy, and I couldn't be happier. I'm actually sitting in my office in my home in Chicago, surrounded by pictures of my children and grandchildren with the flowers that they sent me for the weekend, about 4 feet away from my granddaughter's crib. And I'm also talking to thousands of new and old friends all over the world in a celebration of love. I kind of feel like I'm having a party, and I didn't even have to make sure my house was clean. So thank you all for being here. I am really over the moon. And before I begin, I want to let you know that putting this telesummit together takes a village. And my village starts with my parents. My father's no longer with us, but my mother, who's listening from across the world, I want to thank her for all that she has given me to kind of be the epitome of what unconditional love and acceptance is in this world, and helping to root for me all these years, because we're finally doing it, Mom. We're helping spread unconditional love and compassion. And my brother and sister, my nieces and nephews, my family, my colleagues and clients, my friends, and all of you, and all the speakers that are here, are part of that village that's created. With special thanks to my children and grandchildren who know me and love me anyway and are my biggest supporters and of whom I'm so proud. So that's my Valentine. I had to take a moment to do that to my village. But it takes more than a village. It actually takes a team. And if you follow my yellow brick road behind the curtain of the Wizard of Oz, the person you're going to find at the command, at the control, is my wingman for this weekend, but my guru and my mentor and my leader to make the telesummit happen. I want to introduce you to Carrie Sharpshare of Simply Strategic Success to thank you, Carrie, for putting this together with me and really making it happen. So welcome, Carrie. Say something to everybody, please.
Oh, thank you so much, Linda. Hello, everybody. This has been an absolute labor of love working with Linda on this and helping you, Linda, put together your dream and helping you be able to reach the many, many thousands of people that you are. And so it's absolutely my pleasure. It has been a blast, and, you know, I am so proud of you. Because any of you know out there, when you go to start and embark on something new, it can be scary, it can be rocky, it can be all of those things. And Linda, you have just really stepped up, learned all kinds of new skills, and just have shown the most amazing grace under pressure in getting all of this together. So it's absolutely been my pleasure to support you. It's my pleasure to be here with you. And I know you're going to have an amazing weekend.
Thanks, Carrie. Thank you so much, hon. And I know Carrie wishes she had a nickel for every email she sent me that I lost that she had to resend me, because we did this all with a little ADD brain. So she's not only my right-hand person, she's also my left brain. So thanks, Carrie.
It's my pleasure to be the other half of that wonderful brain.
Thank you. And my special thanks to Bebe Goldstein and her team at Buying Time, Rebecca and Brittany Kopsky and Alex Reed, who did the website, and Lindsay Miller with the photography and the video. And that's it for the thanks for now. I'll be thanking them all weekend. But I want to get a little housekeeping out of the way before we start in with our first great, wonderful David G today. before we do, I just want to make sure you are aware that you'll have the same call-in number for all of the 16 sessions, but they all have different webcasts. So the page to be is your schedule page, lovesummit2014.com/schedule, and that will have in it the list of who's talking and when. Today we are blessed with David G., followed by Ariel Ford, Sark and her beloved John Waddell, and then Sachin and Suzanne Raja are on the roster for today. It's going to be wonderful. So I know that 16 hours plus is a lot of time to spend at your computer, and because of that, we created the Silver Pass, and I know it's something that would give you the best value of this weekend because you won't miss a thing. The Silver Pass, which was the pre-event price, was $47, but because it's Valentine's Day, I'm going to keep it that price through today. It goes up to $97 tomorrow and then $147 after the summit. But today you can still order the Silver Pass, which will give you the recordings, the downloadable recordings to keep forever of all 16 sessions, plus the full transcripts of every audio, so that you'll have all the words to keep forever, to highlight, to mark, to remember, and to go back to as they become relevant in your life. So the Silver Pass you can get today, and I hope you all take advantage of that so you can keep this forever. And you can also send it as a gift. So if any of you don't know what to send people for a Valentine's gift, just get the gift option, and they'll get that today. And for those of you who haven't bought the Silver Pass yet but are online, you get the replays for up to 24 hours. So the free pass will get you the whole summit, and I'm so grateful to all of you for being here. So we have almost 2,000 people from all over the world signed up for this summit. And the goal is to help you remember that you, in fact, let's all take a breath. I'm so excited. I get so effused. All right, let's all take a breath. One more. And I'm going to be reminding myself and you to breathe a lot this weekend, because as we get excited and as we get busy and as we get preoccupied, we go into our chest and constrict. So just a couple belly breaths bring us back into our body, and we can embody everything we are and choose to be. And the point of this weekend is to help you remember that you are a channel of love. You are a beacon of love. You are a vessel of love. And this weekend is about sharing all that love with yourself, with your partners, with your families, in your communities, and ultimately in the world. So we're going to begin, and as I was putting together the outline of this event and thinking of the idea of the Love Summit, I thought of all the amazing people in my life who have been my teachers, my mentors, and my guides. I have been blessed to have so many, and I am humbled and so grateful that many of them are part of this summit. And my co-host today, and he's also going to be interviewing me tomorrow, is one of my dearest teachers and my dearest friends. And here he is. I am so thrilled to start the Love Summit with an epitome of a love magnet and a love teacher. David G. is an internationally recognized meditation teacher, stress management guru. He's a certified Vedic master, public speaker, and the creator of hundreds of guided meditations, including the critically acclaimed CD called Fill What Is Empty and Empty What Is Full, which he'll tell us about. But he's also the author of the award-winning Secrets of Meditation, a practical guide to inner peace and personal transformation. And I've seen him teach for over 6 years, and his style is a unique fusion of both timeless wisdom and real-world practical application that is so filled with heart and humor that he just brings out the best in all of us. He's apprenticed under Dr. Deepak Chopra and Dr. David Simon for over a decade, and he was their Chopra Center University's lead educator and the dean for many years. And personally, David G. has taught hundreds of thousands of people to meditate. That's hundreds of thousands of people. And he now travels the world helping individuals awaken to be the best version of themselves and discover the finest expression in life. And for the past 2 years, he's hosted the radio show Live from the Sweet Spot with David G on Hay House Radio. He's going to talk to us about so much today, but this is a man who is a true light with such an open heart. He's a real bodhisattva, which is someone who's motivated by great compassion. And he's a scholar, a teacher, a mentor, a guide, and I am so honored to also call him one of my dear friends. So welcome, David G.
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
That was the nicest thing anyone ever said to me. What a way to start Valentine's Day, right?
Exactly, and it's all true. It's all true.
Thank you so much, Linda. I'm so thrilled to be here. I'm thrilled to be spending Valentine's Day, at least a little part of it, with you and the tens of thousands around the world who are joining us right now. This weekend, I've been with Blue Courage, which is a law enforcement awareness training. And these are police lieutenants and captains and mounties and cops from all over who come together to learn to meditate and learn to connect to their most divine selves and to bring a little more peace into the world as peace officers. So this is, what an amazing Valentine's Day for me to spend that time with them and to spend this Love Summit, kick off the Love Summit 2014 with you. So thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, you're so welcome. And it actually did kick off with you because when it was an idea in my mind and you said yes, you were the first to say yes. And it was like divinely inspired. It was kind of build it and will they come. And now thousands have come and they're joining us and we're kicking off with you and with meditation. And I know that a lot of your listeners, many of them probably already meditate. Some of them may have tried to meditate. Some of them don't know what meditation is about or how it relates to relationships and being happier. So can you just jump in wherever you'd like and help us learn more?
Sure. Let's look at life logically. There's lots of stuff going on. There's 60,000 to 80,000 thoughts a day pouring into our heads. There's the conversations that we're replaying in our mind, that we've been replaying in our mind maybe since we were 5 or 9 or 25 or 39 or 45 or 49, anywhere along that journey. Our senses are constantly absorbing information. Sometimes it can feel like there's an overwhelm. And simultaneously with that, we're living these lives of conditioning. We've been conditioned ever since we came out of the womb. So there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of chatter. There's a lot of distraction. There's a lot of activity swirling outside of us and inside of us. And if we could only quiet things down a bit, we probably would have a little greater clarity. If we could only quiet our mind down a little bit, we wouldn't have so much anxiousness, so much stress. If we could quiet our heart down a little bit, it wouldn't feel so turbulent and so sad or grieving at times. If we can quiet our body down a little bit, we wouldn't be so knee-jerk or physiologically conditioned. So meditation is just a tool to help with all that quieting. When we meditate, we just slow ourselves down just a little bit, and we drift out of the past, and we drift out of the future into the present moment. And in the present moment, it's pretty quiet, and it's pretty perfect, and everything is whole, and you are connecting to your most infinite aspect, your most divine nature. And that's where all the answers are. So when you quiet yourself down enough, you can hear the whispers of God. You can hear the whispers in your heart. And that's never going to lie. And so that's why I recommend meditation to anyone, no matter who you are. And some people are, think it's a cult or think it's woo-woo or think it's, something that's going to interfere with their relationship to God. And I've often said, prayer is talking to God. Meditation is listening. And we can do, why don't we just do, you know, I like this little meditation. I refer to it as 16 seconds to bliss. Actually, when I'm teaching it to cops and law enforcement, I call it 16 seconds to clarity.
There
but,
you go.
for our audience, it's and when I'm teaching to a yoga crowd, I call it 16 seconds to Ananda. And Ananda just means bliss in Sanskrit. So here's what we can do just to start off the process. Maybe we could, you know, think about right now, we could conjure up in our mind's eye maybe something that's been disturbing us or something that's been making us uncomfortable or something someone said or something someone did. You know, not your deepest trauma, but just something that has been weighing on you just a little bit over the past days and weeks. We all have that. You know, we all had a misunderstanding or a disconnect with someone that we either work with or live with or care about or love. So if you can conjure that up right now in your mind's eye, you can get some clarity on the face of that person. And then close your eyes. And now witness your breath as you breathe in through your nostrils and breathe it really deep down into your belly. And actually watch the breath move into your throat, into your chest, down into your belly. And then watch it there for about 4 seconds. Just witness it. Observe your breath in your body. And now ever so gently, again, out through your nose, allow your breath to move up your chest, into your throat, into your sinuses, and out through your nostrils. And now once it's out, watch it dissipate. Observe it as it drifts away. And when it feels comfortable, you can breathe normally and slowly open your eyes. And that was 16 seconds. And if you played along with me, then in those 16 seconds, you weren't thinking about that person. You weren't thinking about the past. You weren't thinking about the future. You weren't thinking about your situation. You were fully present, following the breath, come in and out. And so I call that 16 seconds to bliss. And if you can do that for 16 seconds, that was just a meditation.
That's fabulous. And it also gives you a chance to reboot, right?
Yes.
You
yes.
shut down that hardwire.
Yeah, we do with our computers. You know, we think it's so normal, but, you know, we don't think about it. Yeah, I could use a little reset on me as well. It creates a little bit of a pattern interrupt, and we are such creatures of patterns and behaviors and conditioning that it's, you know, really, it can help us reconnect to our hearts.
Which on Valentine's Day is exactly every day what we're trying to do is come from our hearts instead of our heads. So if we take that 16 seconds even in the middle of a thought process or an interaction, it allows you to show up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In the middle of an argument, in the middle of a board meeting, in the middle of a conversation, in the middle of traffic, in the middle of watching TV, in the middle of cooking dinner, in the middle of eating, in the middle of lovemaking, in the middle of whatever it is, you know, that pattern interrupt allows the next moment to flow from an unconditioned space in the quietest space with grace and with ease. And so, you know, all of us could use a little more heart opening. I think everybody could. So happy Valentine's, everybody. This is a great opportunity for us to open our hearts together and to connect to love that the universe flows into us. And if we are quieter, we can actually appreciate it a little bit more.
That's beautiful. What do you mean about unconditioned space?
Well, you know, we're conditioned. You know, we come out of the womb and I think really from that first moment we come out of the womb, every single being and every single situation that we come in contact with, we experience it and then we respond a certain way. And somehow that way is either rewarded or negated. And then we reinforce that by doing it, you know, a certain way the next time. And by the time we've, you know, hit like 12 years old, we've probably created the emotional blueprint for how we're going to respond to life. And then every moment that gets added onto that from, you know, going through puberty and into adolescence and into our teens and into our 20s, We're just reinforcing. How we deal with rejection, how we deal with praise, how we deal with money, how we deal with our physical body, our view of ourselves when we look in the mirror, how we view beauty outside of ourselves, how we appreciate certain aspects of spirituality or culture or music or art or nature. You know, think of all those ways. There's so much conditioning because we, you know, we responded a certain way when we were 8. We reinforced it again when we were 12. It happened one more time when we were 15. So really only 3 times. But now we're 45 and someone we care about tells us they don't love us and we have the exact same response that we preconditioned ourselves to have. And we can benefit by creating pattern interrupts in that knee-jerk or that conditioned response to allow us to respond to life differently rather than react to it, to respond to things with purpose rather than knee-jerk, and to respond in an unconditioned way, a new way, a fresh way, a way that serves us rather than a way that may not have been serving us for most of our lives. And that doesn't mean we haven't responded to things brilliantly. But I think that, you know, life is this magnificent evolutionary process. And we keep learning and we keep growing. And when we can have a moment that may have brought us sadness in the past, and now it can bring us elevation and expansion and happiness and an aha moment, just by being more aware, just by allowing life to unfold rather than saying, oh, poor me, or life always does that to me, or I'm such a loser, or of course I'm unworthy, or I'm not entitled to be happy. And we go on and on and on and on with all those things. I'm not saying we do that every single moment, but we all do that. You know, we all do that. You know, you apply for a job and they say no, and you go, of course, rather than, oh, they don't know what they're missing. You know, we say, oh, I probably don't really have the goods. Maybe I'm too old. Maybe I'm not attractive enough. Maybe I wasn't articulate enough. You know, and we have that inner dialogue in our head that's just talking to us, which probably was created sometime between when we were 5 years old and 12 years old. And so meditation allows us to take a space between our breaths like we just did, a space between our thoughts, a space between our words, and ultimately a space between our actions, to create new actions, new behaviors, new emotions, and ways to live and speak and think that actually raise us up. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And just taking it into the realm of relationships, because you said earlier, if somebody tells you they don't love you, but usually somebody doesn't come up and say they don't love you, they do or don't do something that's different from what you hoped or expected them to do, and you translate it as they don't love you. And then you start to build walls or filters through which you see these people, which is part of your conditioning. And then you don't hear them because you're still talking to yourself, either about yourself or about them. And that loop goes over and over again. So when you meditate, you bring that present moment awareness to that moment without putting the past, overlaying it or projecting it in the future. And then, like you say, being more aware that there's another choice we could make in that moment that's much more loving and compassionate. Perfect sense.
Right.
Great. Yeah. So when you're doing that with someone and they're not doing it, you know, let's say you've learned to meditate, and we come up sometimes with, you know, communicating with compassion for yourself and for the other person, or being more mindful or being more conscious, or using nonviolent communication. There's a lot of different ways to communicate, but what if the person you're communicating doesn't have these skills? How do you bring that present moment witnessing awareness into your relationship so that it is more compassionate?
Well, I think, you know, it's a great question. You know, I think most people don't have the skills. You know, I think most people, realistically, that was Peaches, Peaches the Buddha Princess, my meditating mindful Morky. She's an L.A. rescue. I do want to have one commercial here, Adopt Your Next Pet. That was my commercial.
Oh, great.
we have to look at life. Most people, you know, this fight-flight mode, which is, you know, physically, you know, fearing that our lives are at risk and then trying to physically protect ourselves in some way. And, you know, certainly right now there's about 32 wars on the planet being fought, and so there's lots of people in fight-flight mode in those realms. But, you know, we were hardwired with this type of self-preservation mechanism 10,000 years ago when we had the need to run from a saber-toothed tiger or from some, you know, unknown beast. And, you know, they don't exist anymore, really. We translated that into our emotional interactions. So, someone says something to you that challenges your ego. You know, you spend an hour and a half getting all dressed up and putting on hair and makeup and eyeliner, and you know you're looking so amazing. And there's three things that can happen pretty much. Someone can say, "Oh my God, Linda, you look amazing," or they can say nothing, or they can say, "You're wearing that." And we would take all of those three things, personally. If they said, "You look amazing," we would say to ourselves, "Okay, that reinforces my image that I can be amazing and I do look amazing." If they say nothing, we would probably say, "Oh, look how selfish they are," or "I must not look good because they didn't say anything." And if they say, "Oh, you're going to wear that," we might even get defensive. And so the response to that might be to bark back, which would be like the emotional version of fighting, for fighting and fleeing. And if we just shut down and said nothing, that would be like the emotional version of flight. So probably like 95% of the world is always in fight-flight mode. And meditators have another gear. Meditators actually change the physiology and change their emotional states and change how they perceive and view the world. It doesn't mean they're perfect. They can be as big a jerks as non-meditators, and they can say the wrong things and misspeak and, you know, all that stuff. But they are a little more aware. So when they do say something that's rude, they realize it. When someone says something to them, they may not take it as personally because they're more relaxed about the process. So the world out there is in a reactive mode, a bouncing between emotional fighting or fleeing, shutting down or being aggressive in terms of when we defend our ego. And meditators just have another gear. They don't have to even consciously think of it. You know, ultimately, your physiology becomes trained, your heartbeat slows down, all your stress hormones, glucagon, adrenaline, and cortisol are suppressed, your sex hormone, your growth hormone, your immune system become elevated, your blood doesn't get plump and sticky like it does when you're in anxiety mode. It actually becomes more fluid, and so it's going to nurture us and nourish us on a daily basis. And I just think that, you know, the heart is our pathway that connects the divine spirit, you know, to our soul. You know, it's sort of like that bridge that connects our personal soul, our Atman, with the universal soul, Brahman, Godhead. And if the heart is turbulent, if the heart is heavy, those conversations can't go through there. And that's why they go up to the head, where there's a whole, you know, intellectual conversation, and we're sounds just like gibberish. We always need to just quiet ourselves a little bit, and then the heart acts like the pathway that connects the universe and our own souls.
I love that, and I want to quote from your wonderful book because there's a part, there's so much in there. When I read it, I've got it underlined and earmarked and all the rest of that. But one of the ones is the part that talks about your true self. And I'm just going to quote a couple sentences where you said, "Meditation quiets you to a state where you experience life with a deeper understanding of your true self, your unconditioned self, the infinite you that rests at the core of who you are underneath your body and beneath this worldly garb of titles, roles, masks, ego, and the complexities of this life." So this true self, this heart-centered place to live and love and be grateful and be connected, that is what you teach so beautifully. So beautifully. And sometimes the term higher consciousness comes up. And again, not in a hierarchical sense that somebody that meditates is better than or otherwise. But what do you think of the term higher consciousness?
Well, you know, there can be a couple of different interpretations of that. You know, a lot of us, you know, we don't feel comfortable either using the word God or talking about God, or that, you know, God is not the thing that we're above. So a lot of people, you know, either lean towards their higher power, their higher consciousness, their most divine selves. My interpretation is that, you know, here we are. You know, we're these human beings in these flesh bodies that have a, you know, that will be around here for the span of a lifetime. That's pretty much who we are. We're very, very flawed. We're very, very imperfect. Our skin ages and wrinkles. We misspeak. We say things we wish we hadn't. We do things we wish we hadn't. We know we should apologize to people, but we decide not to. You know, we sometimes cut people off from our lives because, you know, our pride is too great. You know, it's like all these things. I mean, this is humanity. All these things that, you know, we're cruel. We're mean to others. We're mean to ourselves. And then there's this most divine expression of who we are. You know, the part of us that is whole and pure and perfect and infinite and enlightened. We could call it, you know, our most genuine self, the best version of who we can be. And so, you know, when you talk about like higher consciousness, that's us. That's our higher consciousness. And I believe that the definition of spirituality is sort of like the journey that we take from that human state to our higher consciousness on a daily basis, on a momentary basis. And, you know, each day when we, you know, ask that question, you know, we've asked, like, what would Buddha do? What would Jesus do? You know, when you say, what would the best version of me do? Would the best version of me try to be right in this moment? Would the best version of me be cruel? Would the best version of me really need to make a point? Would the best version of me need to repeat myself 5 times? You know, you can go on and on and on. Like, no. My higher consciousness, you know, my best version doesn't require any of those things because it's not coming from my ego. It's coming from my heart. It's coming from my soul. And so that's how I define it. You know, what would David G. do in this? I don't talk about myself in the third person, but I'll say, you know, what would the best version of me do right now? And that's me coming from my highest, my best state of consciousness at the time. You know, is it an enlightened state? It's my best state. And maybe it's just better than I was 5 minutes ago, but I'll take it in that moment.
That's great. Now imagine if everybody did that starting today with the relationships in their lives that they have. First of all, if they did it with themselves and started talking nicer to themselves with more compassion, and then at the same time see their partner or their children or their parents or their coworkers or their friends from this vantage point of we're all one, we're all part of the same oneness, we all have these human parts that get in the way sometimes, but when you're coming from that place and shifting into it, even in that 16-second shift, imagine what it would do for relationships in your home, in your workplace, and all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, that's great.
Well, let's talk about how it would bring more passion or connection or fun starting now. So if people could, and we'll talk a little bit more about the how-tos of meditation, but let's assume they get your book, Secrets of Meditation, and they learn all the different ways you can learn it, or they enhance their practice. But how can they do that in this moment today and bring more passion or connection or fun into their lives?
Well, you know, I think, you know, really the starting point is to bring some stillness and silence into your life on a daily basis. So whether that's 16 seconds that you can introduce, you know, a few times over the course of the day, just to give you a little pause, just a little breath, or whether it's, you know, if you do that 16 seconds 4 times, that's a minute, 4 seconds. And that's really how I taught police and military. I'm working with the military as well. up in Camp Pendleton, returning Afghani, returning soldiers from Afghanistan. And so, you know, we start with 16 seconds, and then we do it four times, and that's a minute, 4 seconds. And then all we do is add a minute a week. And suddenly, you know, we've hit the, you know, the midway point in the year, and these guys are meditating for like 25 minutes every single morning. And their lives are blossoming and blooming. So I can, you know, I can tell you that people who have been the most stressed out, who've lived in fight flight through 5, 6, 7 tours of duty, who've, you know, cops who wake up every single day with the highest suicide rate of any profession in the United States, you know, and are holding that stuff in and are living in fight flight from the moment they open their eyes to the moment they go to sleep. These people integrate these teachings so gently and incrementally into their lives. And they don't say, oh, I only meditated for 3 minutes today. I'm such a loser. They say, oh, my, 3 minutes of stillness and silence? That's great. And so I would encourage everybody out there, if you're thinking, you know, if you've heard, no, you have to meditate for 30 minutes twice a day, or no, you have to do this, you know, you don't have to do anything. But if you'd like to be a little bit happier, if you'd like to invite love more easily into your life, then just connecting a few times a day, whether it's 2 minutes or 5 minutes, just of you time, that will change your life. And if you say, oh, I can't sit doing nothing for 5 minutes, well, guess what? If you don't want to sit for 5 minutes by yourself, who else do you think wants to hang out with you for more than 5 minutes? And so, you know, this is an opportunity for you to just, you know, get a little more comfortable with yourself and a little more peaceful with yourself. You know, it's like there's a sweet Hafiz poem. Hafiz is this Sufi poet from Persia, Iran. There's a beautiful teeny little poem. After all this time, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. Look what happens with a love like that. It lights the whole sky. And so when we find ourselves, you know, in a situation feeling entitled or feeling resentful or feeling, you know, whatever, you know, remember, we're all just trying to do our best. And nobody owes anyone anything extra because someone, you know, gave them love. If we can just love ourselves and flow love, that's fine. We will be the happiest beings on the planet. And, you know, I think it's also really helpful to, you know, if you say to yourself, oh, I'm the kind of person who's a hermit. No, you're not. We're not hermited people. We're connecting. We're connection people. So if you, like, you know, don't go out or stay to yourself or say no, you know, that's just made up in your head. So I would encourage, you know, people to really connect to other people. Go out, you know, join things, do things, say yes. Let's make the commitment starting this Valentine's Day to, like, say yes when someone says, hey, you want to go to the, and you go, oh, no, it's really out of laziness that you don't do it. And so I think, you know, that's really the first thing, because we have to remember that, you know, that a hunting party often has a greater chance of flushing love and God out into the open than a warrior all alone. That's another Hasid. And so we should get out there. That's what this collective is. That's what the Love Summit 2014 is. You know, it's us not trying to do it alone and figure out how can I have more love in my life. It's by us all connecting and creating a love collective. And that's how we do it. And so you're doing the Lord's work, Linda. I appreciate it because you're pulling us all together. Thank you.
We all are. It's all one. And it's such a gift to learn how to meditate. And for people listening, because you mentioned that some people think they can't do 20 minutes or 30 minutes or they can't even do 5. And I found, because my background is in therapy, that part of the reason I think people can't or don't think they can meditate is because they have, in their conditioning, kind of dealt with their pain by, like you said, keeping it in their body, exiling it into their bodies, going into their heads to figure out how to manage and let their egos take over on what kind of roles to play in the world. But the energy from those unresolved feelings from trauma or experiences reside in their body. So when they're not being busy as in over busy, and they actually sit down, sometimes what's happening is those unresolved feelings start to come up, and it's a great opportunity to heal them. And I know you talk a lot about forgiveness and healing emotionally. So let's help people recognize that just because they can't sit doesn't mean they won't be able to. It just means they may need to love themselves a little more and forgive themselves a little more and make space. So,
and to take that even further, you know, in Secrets of Meditation, you know, I wrote a whole chapter called The Five Myths of Meditation. And one of those, you know, one of those myths is when I sit down to meditate, I'm supposed to clear my mind or stop my thoughts. And your thoughts only stop when you're dead. So If you have thoughts, that means you're alive. And so most meditators or new meditators, suddenly they're sitting there and they start to have a feeling or an emotion, or they start list making, or they start to think about what they're going to do when they stop meditating, and then they think that they're losers and they're actually human and perfect. and so that's a sign that you're alive. And if you're alive, you should celebrate that. And so, you know, that's like the number one reason people stop meditating. I've heard that so many, I have monkey mind and I've got thoughts. Well, of course you have thoughts. And when you're sitting there, it's normal to, you know, to have thoughts or to be fidgety or to be restless. And again, if you can forgive yourself for that and allow it and say, oh, this is actually part of the experience. How cool is that? I think I'll continue meditating now. And I won't beat myself up that I'm alive. Because that's really all you're doing. If you're beating yourself up that you're having thoughts, you're scolding yourself for being alive. And we want to celebrate being alive. You know, there's this beautiful line in the New Testament. When we forgive, we free ourselves from the ties that bind us to the one that hurt us.
Mm.
And sometimes that could be ourselves.
Right.
And so if we're just willing to forgive ourselves, it's a lot easier to forgive somebody else. Because, you know, all of us want to be forgiven by someone for something. You know, the self-righteous of us may say, oh, no, I'm not looking for forgiveness for anything. But, you know, we all wish we hadn't said or done something or had said or done something at some point in our life. And we would like a person who experienced pain from our actions or from our words to forgive us. And so, you know, forgiveness is tri-pronged. You know, there's self-forgiveness, there's forgiving others, and there's asking others for forgiveness.
Mm.
And it all starts with that self-forgiveness. Are you willing to forgive yourself? Are you willing to say, you know what? If I had the option of doing this again, I would do something differently. If you can say that to yourself, that you actually wouldn't cheat again on your spouse or wouldn't have reacted so reactively or violently or wouldn't have said those harsh words that stung and can't be taken back or wouldn't have sent that letter or that email. You know, we all have, you know, tons and tons of actions and sins or that we wish could be forgiven. Well, if we can ask ourselves, you know, that question, if this happened again, would I do it differently? And if the answer is yes, then you have to forgive yourself in that moment. Because, you know, we're human and we do stuff and we don't know what it's supposed to be like. No one gets an owner's manual when we come out of the womb.
Right.
And we're all just trying to figure stuff out on the fly. And so forgiveness starts in our own heart, just like peace starts in our own heart. And just like love starts in our own heart. You know, we can't start giving it out to the world if we haven't truly understood what it feels like and what it means within ourselves and accepted it within ourselves. And once you forgive yourself, it's a lot easier to forgive somebody else. Once you love yourself and you know all the secrets and flaws, it may be a little easier to love somebody else. And so, you know, I teach a lot. I'm doing these workshops. You know, I teach in Carlsbad, California, which is about 30 miles north of San Diego, about 120 miles south of L.A. And I call it the sweet spot of the universe. And it's, you know, it's a little beach community. There's a lot of, you know, spiritual history in that place. It's where Deepak Chopra and David Simon came to, that area, to create the Chopra Center. It's where Paramahansa Yogananda wrote the book, Autobiography of a Yogi. There's a lot of special, sweet energy there, and it's about 30 minutes south of Thich Nhat Hanh's beautiful monastery and retreat center. And so there's just a lot of, you know, beautiful, beautiful energy. So I try to do something every single month in this. I call it the sweet spot of the universe.
But, it is. I've been there. It's fabulous.
It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. And it doesn't have a lot of things, and it's got a lot of other amazing things. And so I found this beautiful home, this beautiful property on the sand overlooking the ocean. And that's where I hold all my workshops. And so giant pelicans are flying by. Suddenly I'll be talking and I'll realize that there's whales dancing in the distance or dolphins jumping out of the water. It's really, it's a beautiful spot. And one of the things that, you know, it's where I do my teacher trainings. It's where I do my workshops and meditation workshops. And that's actually where I am, right now, teaching New Courage, law enforcement awareness training. And, you know, with them, you know, really I just teach them to be a little more aware of their breath, aware of their bodies, aware of their emotions. You know, they're so vigilant. That's the word they like to use. They're so vigilant, eyeing the crowd and determining what every single thing is happening outside of them. But they're not as aware of how they're feeling and what they're doing physiologically and emotionally. It's pretty powerful, and one of the things that we were talking about this morning is compassion, and a lot of people think compassion is just empathy, you know, like I feel your pain, but compassion takes it one step further, and I think this is really an important aspect of relationship. Compassion isn't just empathizing with someone. It's also rooting for their suffering to end.
Oh, love it.
And so that is such a strong foundation of relationships, because most of us are in relationships, you know, and we were attracted to the relationship, and then we got infatuated with the relationship, and then we sort of, you know, everything cooled down a little bit. The drugs wore off. And, you know, and then, you know, we found another level of connection. But it's really, you know, and that's really probably where we are in that relationship. But throughout that relationship and all the rises and falls, you know, of life and of that, you know, we start hoarding grievances. We start having resentments. And we can, in that process, start to withdraw our compassion. And when we can really connect to it and become aware of it and look our partner or our friend, you know, in the eye and looking into their soul, looking into their heart and say, hey, you know what? And you could do this silently. You know, I'm rooting for your suffering to end. Or you could say it out loud. You know, it's like Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Buddhist monk. He has a great line. When someone tells you that they're in pain, or someone acts reactive or says something mean to you, the perfect thing to say back to them is, darling, I'm here for you.
I love
that.
That's
all any of us want, right? We just want somebody that we care about to be there for us. You know,
and that's so perfect, because if people did that today, I mean, if they really learned to put their walls down, that habitual way of looking and the courting of the grievances, and if they change their filters so that they can really be in present moment awareness, then when they're talking to their partner and their partner's acting out in ways that are hurtful or angry or making them resentful, mm-hmm. and you can actually do that 16-second reboot and centering and come from that compassionate heart that says, and this is a leap, but if you do it, miracles happen. If you could actually say to your child, to your partner, darling, I'm here for you. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Wouldn't that be amazing? And if you're talking
if you
about...
Just, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
If you condition yourself to sort of, you know, say that first, before you say anything, it will even change what you're about to say next.
Exactly.
You know,
and if you can even think it without saying it.
Right.
Anything
right.
you
oh,
can
no.
do to
it's
bring that.
It's amazing.
It's
right.
amazing.
That energetically shifts, even when I'm mad at a person, you know, and then they tell me something, and I'll ask myself, what's my best version? You know, how would my best version respond? Kick them when they're down, or say, darling, I'm here for you. Yeah, you know, it's just like, it's a no-brainer.
Exactly. You know? Or even friend or acquaintance or coworker. And that forgiveness piece, I mean, I've always seen it as a gift we give ourselves. That when we forgive, we're giving ourselves permission to let go of the hook that's in us from that interaction. But it also allows us to be present in a way that we can make new choices. And we can do it with a sense of presence that just allows you to be there. And allows you to be who you are and allows them to be who they are. And then from a compassionate space of witnessing moment awareness, work out whatever you need to work out, but from a much more heart-centered connection.
Yeah.
And it also allows us. Go ahead.
Close your eyes for just for one moment. And then this is what Mark Twain said about forgiveness, and just get this image in your head. Forgiveness is the fragrance that the violet sheds on the heel that has crushed it.
Mm.
That just, you know, just every time I just have that image in my head, it just, you know, makes me want to forgive.
That's great. I ask my clients sometimes if they had a magic wand or if they could flip a switch, would they be willing to consider that they and the other person have each done the best they knew how to do, considering their level of awareness at the time? And the more you meditate, you have a more higher level of awareness. You're not in that fight, flight, reactive mode, right?
Right, because that's really what namaste means. You know, I honor the light in you that's also in me, and when you're in that space and I'm in that space, we're one. I'm neither above you nor below you. You know, and it's that so that when we see someone doing something that we deem stupid or immature or whatever, you know, we've been there. We'll be there again. We'll do that thing. We'll say it with our accent. We'll say it with our voice. We'll say it with our lips instead of theirs. We'll say it in our situation, not theirs. We'll say it using our words, not theirs, but we'll do it. So if we can proactively just start forgiving every being that's out there, that's how the energy of the world shifts.
What a great thing to start on Valentine's Day or any day.
Yeah.
And I'm going to quote from your book again because you're such a poet. You said that it's the purpose of the spiritual journey is to expand your mind so that you can discover a self that can see the possibilities from an expanded point of view, even the ones that are opposing yours, and then from there choose creatively, intuitively, and sacredly. And that's so beautiful. And let's talk about the sacred. How do you take, you know, the relationships that you have and with meditation elevate them from whatever the fight-flight conditioned job that we're doing with it now and really bring the sacred and the love back into it?
Well, you know, Abraham Maslow, he's the guy who created the hierarchy of needs, you know,
right.
laid it out for the world to see. And, you know, essentially, sort of like a pyramid or a triangle, and at the bottom of that, you know, essentially are our biological needs, you know, our needs to drink water, to sleep, to eat food, to pee, to poop. We need to get those needs met before anything else happens. We can't else if any of those needs are not met. The next above that are the needs of safety, freedom from fear, roof over our head, clothing, the ability to go to work without being shot, the ability to, you know, put out the garbage without being mugged. You know, if that need is not met, then we live in fear and we can't think of anything else. But if our need for our biological, needs are met first and our safety needs are met next, the next level of needs are love and belonging. And that's, you know, friendship, family, intimacy, and that's where, you know, the four needs of the heart, attention, affection, appreciation, and acceptance. And they're actually progressive. You know, we all want to be seen. That's attention. We all want to be looked at. We all just want to be, you know, seen without anything deeper. We want someone to make eye contact with us or at least know we're there. A little more, a little deeper into the love quotient, you know, it's affection. We want to be seen, but we also want to be held and cuddled and patted on the head and you know, winked at with a smile or just smiled at in general. A little further is that appreciation. You know, appreciation, we all want to be acknowledged in relationships, in work, in all those aspects of our lives. And we all want to be accepted. We all want to be included. We all want to feel like we're a part of something. So attention, affection, appreciation, and acceptance. And if those needs are met, Maslow says, then we can move on to self-esteem, confidence, and respect, and, you know, achievement, things like that. And if those needs are met, then, and only then, can we move to self-actualization, which is creativity and spirituality, you know, and spontaneity, and truly living in the moment. So we must work and lean in the direction of having the needs of our heart, attention, affection, appreciation, and acceptance, having those needs met on a daily basis. And when we suddenly find ourselves reacting to someone or not being kind or being curt or being anything, we have to realize, you know what? High likelihood that right now one of my needs is not being met. Maybe the person didn't pay enough attention to me. Maybe they didn't show me the affection I thought I was going to receive. Maybe they didn't appreciate me or show, you know, acknowledgement for something that I did. Or maybe they didn't include me. And so we can, like, stop fighting and stop arguing and stop setting up all these things by realizing in that moment, when you're starting to feel just a little constriction inside your heart or a little heaviness inside you, rather than blurting something out or storming out of the room or shutting down, just innocently ask yourself, which of the four A's, which of the needs of the heart, attention, affection, appreciation, or acceptance, was not met? And then at least you can even have a conversation and say to the person, you know, I feel small right now, and it's my issue, not yours, but, you know, I thought you were going to give me a compliment, and you didn't say anything, and I thought I did a really great job. And so I think I was looking for acknowledgement in this moment. I mean, how powerful is it for us to be that, you know, vulnerable? I think vulnerability is always a sign of strength, never a sign of weakness.
It is. It is, and asking for what you need and getting clear on what you need gives the other party an opportunity to give it to you, because everybody has different needs and different currencies of love. So whether it's touch or words or acts of service or back rubs or cooked meals, learning how to ask for what you need is the first step in getting it. And learning your currency, but also learning your partner's currency, because you might be giving them hugs and they might just need space. And just having these conversations, but doing it from this higher self or true self or higher level of consciousness or more compassionate, open-hearted presence, that's going to give you more of what you want. And also giving what you want is how to receive it. So if you're looking for more attention, give more attention. Make eye contact with the person that might be avoiding your eyes. If you're looking for more affection, learn to be more affectionate in ways that meet their needs. And if you're looking for more appreciation, I guarantee you, you've probably shut down in terms of appreciating the people in your life. So if you switch that, you'll get more back. And that acceptance, as you said earlier, it starts with accepting yourself. It starts with accepting our humanity and our divinity, and knowing that, like you said, we're spiritual beings having human experience. We're all doing the best we can based on our level of awareness. And if we can practice present moment awareness and forgiveness, life shifts in a moment.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Because that was great. That was beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, we're all co-creating, and your talk about, you know, how to live a life with purpose and peace and compassion and love and fulfillment, and how when we do meditate, we can transcend that, the traumas that we've lived or the struggles that we've had or the challenges of our past, and be present in the moment to make new choices. And meditation gives you that opportunity.
Yeah.
So what can you tell new meditators, you know, in terms of they've heard and they think, okay, it's still not for me?
Well, I would ask new meditators, you know, a series of questions. Would you like to be happier?
Uh-huh.
Would you like to feel more fulfilled? Would you like to be the calm amidst the chaos? Would you like life to come at you almost as it's appearing in slow motion so you would never feel overwhelmed ever again? Would you like to connect more deeply to your heart? Would you like to have greater peace of mind when you put your head on the pillow at night? Would you like to have an increase in your sex hormone and your growth hormone and your immune system? That's all. And,
my goodness.
You know, and if you say no to any of those things, then okay, then I guess you shouldn't meditate. But if there's any of those things that you would like, you can have them all just by meditating. And you don't have to live in a cave, and you don't have to be chanting Om, and you don't have to have your hand in secret special mudras and be in Utpluti or full lotus. You can really just sit in a comfortable chair in your backyard, you know, for just a few minutes every morning and every afternoon, and just connect to the stillness and silence that rests within.
That's beautiful. And for those of the Midwest in the middle of a snowstorm, backyards aren't available, but even to get up and get out of bed. And would you give us your very highly specialized way to ritualize meditation? I've always loved
Thank
it.
Thank you for giving me that opportunity. yes. We all wake up and we have these morning ablution rituals that we all do. We all wake up, we look at the clock, and then we do between 8 and 15 things in consecutive order on autopilot. Usually Monday through Friday is one series, and Saturday and Sunday is another series, depending on where if you work on weekends or not. But we do these, and we bang them out one after another. We pee, we poop, we shower, we brush, we make up, we hair, we cook, we eat, we drink, we pet, we do something with kids, we watch TV, we get online, we check Facebook, we send an email, you know. We do all that stuff, and we get dressed at some point in there. And so the technique that I developed is known as RPM, Rise, Pee, Meditate.
Could you repeat that for those people who didn't get that down, please? RPM again.
Sure. RPM is Rise, then Pee, P-E-E, then Meditate.
Thank you.
And we figure we're all going to wake up, and if we don't, this is not relevant. So we, you know, not too big a leap to think a few moments after you wake up, you're going to pee. If the very, 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 very next thing you do is to sit and meditate, whether that's for 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 20 minutes, or 30 minutes, then within 35 minutes of you opening your eyes, you've got a half hour or 10 minutes or 5 minutes of stillness and silence that did not exist prior to that. And then everything you touch throughout the day, everything you say, everything you do, has a little bit of stillness, a little bit of silence. And I used to say, oh, I'll meditate at 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock never comes. You can't do it at a time. You truly have to do it just like you don't brush your teeth at a certain time. Even though you know you may wake up at the exact same time every day, you don't brush your teeth at the exact same time every day. You brush your teeth after one thing and before another thing. And so if we can just squeeze that meditation in, you know, to rise, pee, meditate, then brush, or then shower, or then put up the pot of coffee, or then poop, or whatever your, you know, whatever your morning, everyone's got a different ritual. But I think that can really help people connect to it. And, you know, I get probably 50 emails a day from people that I've taught really over the last like 13 years saying, I'm still RPMing. You know, you taught me to RPM in 2005 and I still do it. And it's like the one way that you can sort of, just like we always brush our teeth, it's rare that we wake up and say, you know, today I'm just not going to brush. You know, we don't do that, you know. If we do it once in a year, that's a lot. So we can do the exact same thing, you know. We've ritualized it. We don't even think about it. We pick up the toothbrush, usually right after something else, and, you know, I brush my teeth and step into the shower. I've been brushing my teeth and stepping into the shower for, I don't know, 25 years. I don't think about it. I don't say, no, I'll put down the brush. Should I walk peaches or should I pee? You know, no, I brush and step into the shower. And so, you know, for me, I've ritualized it. If we can ritualize our daily sadhana, our daily meditation practice, then we're not even thinking about it. And we've locked in stillness and silence. We've connected to that. And when we can, you know, connect to that space between our thoughts, our breaths, our words, when we open our eyes, we come back here, we're taking back a teaspoon of stillness into this world. We're taking back a thimbleful of silence into our day. And we're taking back a tweezerful of our unconditioned self into every moment. And you don't have to think about it. Suddenly there's just a lot of stillness around. And that's where love, you know, love grows in the fertile soil of stillness.
And when you think of bringing that into each of your relationships in this moment onward, it's a beautiful goal to have. And I can't tell you how many times I put RPM on the board and given you credit each time for that, by the way.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you. Thank you. You know, you're an amazing teacher, Linda. You know, for all of you out, Linda and I have taught workshops together. We have rocked it in Chicago. You know, we'll
and it's the reason we're online, because when you were here at Infinity last year, we had to close registration because too many people came, which actually motivated my desire to learn how to do all this online so that we could reach people all over the world. And
right.
Speaking all over the world, your book is going all over the world, because if one quote about his book is that if there's one book to read on moving through challenges and lifting your life to the next level, it's The Secrets of Meditation. So tell us about your book and the languages it's going on into and everything. So share that.
My book is published by Hay House, and each week I have a radio show on Hay House Radio also. You can go to hayhouseradio.com. Amazing people. You know, it's Deepak has been on my show, and Don Miguel has been on my show, and I've had some of the greatest guests. You know, it's just amazing. And I'm so grateful to Louise Hay and to Reed Tracy for really inviting me to into the Hay House sandbox. And who else is on that network? Wayne Dyer has a show, and Marianne Williamson has a show, and Carolyn Mays, and Doreen Virtue, and really some amazing people. Hay House Radio is a radio for your soul. It's a great, great environment.
And when is your show?
My show is on, how do I do this, multiple time zones, 3 p.m. Pacific time every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Eastern time. If you are outside of the country, it's usually around 11 o'clock at night. in the UK, midnight in the rest of Europe. And in Hawaii, it's noon, and it's around 11 o'clock, I think, in Alaska, Anchorage. But it gets replayed for 4 straight days.
Oh, great.
And so I would encourage everyone, you know, listen, turn it on, do whatever feels right. We talk about meditation, Ayurveda, Vedanta, conscious choice making, all sorts of fun and kooky stuff. And we have, you know, really fun guests as well. And really my everything in my life really shifted when I wrote Secrets of Meditation after being the dean of Chopra Center University and the lead educator of the Chopra Center. With Deepak's blessing, I left that world to travel the world and teach meditation. And I still teach at the Chopra Center, at Seduction of Spirit and Journey into Healing. So it's great to be hanging out with Deepak, you know, at least for 5 weeks a year. And I have the radio show, which touches about 20,000 people every Wednesday. And the replays, you know, are in the tens of thousands. And now I speak also at the Hay House I Can Do It. And that's, you know, that's actually my first one ever, was February 3rd up in San Jose. So, you know, the book really has led me in so many different directions, and over the last several months it's been translated into Russian and Swedish and Danish and Dutch and just recently Bulgarian and Arabic and
Spanish.
It just and it just today is the official release. Valentine's Day is the official release in Spanish.
Oh, wonderful.
So people have been pre-ordering it. But, yeah, I'm really excited. So, you know.
And how do people get all these things? Because I know on your website you also have guided meditations and free meditations every week and videos and articles. So how do they find you?
Visit davidji.com, davidji.com, if you don't know what J.I. is. After I was at the Chopra Center for about 6 months, Deepak Chopra and David Simon came to me and they said, listen, it's too confusing. You have the same name as David Simon. We have to change your name. I said, so what are you going to change it to? And they said, David G. I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, J.I. is a term of reverence in Hindi. It means beloved. And I said, oh, well, my mother named me David because in the Bible, David is beloved. So I'm beloved, beloved. So you can go to davidji.com, D-A-V-I-D-J-I. You should sign up for the David G Sweet Spot Meditation Community. It's free. You just have to enter your email address. You get a weekly free guided meditation, a blog, an article. You can connect to like-minded people. You're the first person to hear about if I'm doing some kind of workshop or if I'm doing some type of fundraiser or something along those lines. And so I would encourage everyone. You can always unsubscribe if it's not, you know, if it's not a love connection or if it's not truly bringing greater fulfillment into your life. And I'm a privacy freak, so I will never share your email with anyone ever under any circumstances. So I would invite everyone. Come on!
Fantastic.
And you can follow me
on Facebook. Person. We got Facebook,
yes,
and
person.
We got things coming up in person. So where are the things that are coming up in person? And I know they change.
I have something coming up every single month, but at the end of this month, if you want to come with me to the Galapagos Islands and swim, meditate, and hang out with turtles, you can do that. That's off the coast of Ecuador. And in March, I have my Dharma workshop. So if you're looking for your purpose, to discover your purpose in life, that's April 3rd to the 6th. And you can catch me in Denver at the end of March Hay House I Can Do It. And I think Louise Hay is going to be there as well. And I do teacher trainings, Masters of Wisdom and Meditation teacher trainings twice a year. And the next one starts in June and it ends with a full week. It's online video webinars and lessons and emails and Skype sessions for 3.5 months, and then we all meet in person in the sweet spot of the universe at the Meditation Nest for a week, and we'll be meeting November 22nd, September, I think it's the September 22nd to the 28th,
once we sign up on your website, you're going to send us all that information. People can get it. Right?
Oh, yeah. You can just go to my website, or you can just send me an email at info@davidg.com.
Fantastic.
And that's actually my email. I actually see that. No one else does.
Well, you have I remember when I first met you, you came to Chicago with the Chopra Center in 2008, and I saw you on stage, and you not only lit up the room, but laughter was everywhere, because you have such a way, as everyone can see, of bringing the infinite wisdom of the sages into practical applications, but with such joy and such love that beloved works perfectly for you. Because everybody falls in love with you and Peaches, and just the two of you together are quite a light. And I just want to quote, I saw Jean Houston on your site has called you a midwife of souls. And
yes.
For me, that is truly what you do. You help us go from our constricted, ego-based, limited way of fight-flight reactivity, and by allowing us to get to that stillness and silence within, you remind us of who we truly are. And as Don Miguel Ruiz said about you, you open the heart of the beautiful dreamer resting deep within all of us. And you do it with such grace and love. And I wonder if you would lead us in that metta meditation that you were talking about.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to do that. First of all, thank you so much, Linda. And you're so sweet, and it's not a one-way love. It's a love connection. I'm so inspired by you, and when I'm with you, and haven't been with you in a while. I'm not coming back to Chicago, so it's really warm.
Okay, so. It's gonna be warm soon. We're gonna get you back here. We're gonna get you back to the Midwest. I promise.
But I love spending time with you, and I really appreciate it.
Same here. My children, my daughters love you. You're very loved everywhere you go. So.
Thank you so much. And I want to thank all of our listeners here and those who've taken the time out of their Valentine's Day to sort of like kick off this amazing Love Summit, because, we transform the world by transforming ourselves, and it happens, heart by heart. So this is really where we shift the world, and this is where we really shift our lives.
As you say on your site, that quote from Lao Tzu, that when we let go of who you think you are, you become who you might be. So all that conditioning we can let go of and just listen to that stillness from the heart and the soul and the spirit and compassionately communicate, and you're going to lead us in that meditation, and I'm so grateful.
Yeah. So let's everyone get comfortable now, and let's close our eyes. Let's take a long, slow, deep breath in. And just let that go. We always want to be breathing through our nostrils, in and out. If we can do that, our breaths will be deeper, and we'll release more. Let's do that one more time. Long, slow, deep breath in. And release it. And now as you breathe in, feel the universe flow love, unconditional loving kindness into your heart. That's called metta, M-E-T-T-A. So as you breathe in, feel metta, loving kindness. Just fill your heart. And as you exhale, feel flow gently back out into the world. Let's do that again. Long, slow, deep breath in of the universe's loving kindness into your heart. Just shower yourself right now. You're so deserving of love. Shower yourself with loving kindness. And as you exhale, just flow that back out into the world. Hafiz said, when all of your desires are distilled, you will have but two choices: to love more and be happy. So let's do that one more time. Long, slow, deep breath in of metta, filling our hearts with attention, affection, appreciation, and acceptance. Filling them. And gently release that. now as you breathe in, heal your heart, fill with metta, unconditional loving kindness. But this time as you exhale, radiate that out to all your loved ones. Loved ones who've passed to the next realm, loved ones who you live with, loved ones who you don't live with. Just shower them. Let's do it again. Breathe in metta, sweet loving kindness of the universe, and flow it right back out. All those whom you love. And keep breathing. Take a long, slow, deep breath in. Feel your heart fill up with that metta, that sweet loving kindness. And as you exhale, now flow that out to your friends, all the friends who are out there in your life, past friends, future friends, good friends, close friends, casual friends. Breathe in that metta from the universe. Feel your heart fill to the brim and flow it out to all of your friends. And now, with a long, slow, deep breath in, feel your heart fill with metta, forgiveness, compassion. And when you exhale, flow it out to your acquaintances, those people who you're not really sure of who they are, maybe the barista in the coffee shop, maybe someone you pass on the street, just acquaintances, people whose faces you see but you don't really know who they are. Breathe in loving kindness, metta from the universe, and flow it out to all of them. Bathe them in your love-filled light. And now take a long, slow, deep breath in, and your heart is just brimming with love right now, just so filled with metta. You've got enough to spare for the whole world. So as you breathe in and fill your heart with metta, flow it out to those with whom you have a grievance. Radiate it out and just shower everyone with whom you have a grievance with that metta. You're a conduit of love right now. You're a channel of love. Breathe in again, long, slow, deep breath. Feel your heart fill with metta. And just release it and radiate it out to all those people with whom you have a grievance. It's bubbling over in your heart. And that's why we say, just fill what is empty and empty what is full. You are a channel of love. And now take a long, slow, deep breath in. Feel your heart fill with that sweet, metta, loving kindness. And radiate it out to every sentient being on the planet, in every corner of the globe. Now breathe in again. Feel your heart fill with that sweet metta loving kindness. And flow it out throughout the entire galaxy, filling the cosmos. And now with your next in-breath, feel it come from every single corner of the cosmos. Feel that sweet metta loving kindness surge back into your heart and just fill you with appreciation, with gratitude, and with love. And let's just sit in this space for a few moments. Feels comfortable, you can slowly open your eyes and hug or kiss the first person that you see. And if you're alone, hug or kiss yourself. You can kiss your hand, or you can just give yourself a nice big hug, because you are just a love machine at this moment.
A love conduit, a love channel, a love magnet, And with all that you just gave us, a light of love in this matrix of love that we're all connected to, both on this Love Summit and every day in every way. And through meditation and compassion and coming from your heart, you can fill with love and fill your heart and your home and the world. And I thank you so much, David G., for all that you have given me, to the hundreds of thousands of people you've touched personally. You are a gift in my life, and you are a gift in the world. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart. And I thank everybody listening. What a way to start the Love Summit. What a way to start Valentine's Day. And I know it's time we have to go, but we'll see you again soon for Ariel Ford talking about being a magnet for love, for the soulmate secret. So thank you all for being here. David G., thank you, thank you, thank you. Sending
thank
so much
you,
love.
Thank you, Linda. You rock. And you, thanks for bringing us all together so we can feel the love.
We're all doing it together. Right, I couldn't have done it alone. I love you, and we'll talk soon. Take good care, hon.
Love you too.
Bye-bye. Bye, everybody. Bye-bye. See you soon. But before you go, I've got just a couple thoughts. First of all, isn't he the best? And he's going to be joining us tomorrow at 2 o'clock Central, since we can never get enough of David G. So just take a few moments. I know we've gone longer, and we're going to be back soon, but just take a few moments today to do your 16 seconds to bliss, to clarity and to love, and to make a heart-centered connection with yourself. You can meditate even a few moments to get to that quiet between your thoughts and just breathe. Breathe into the love that you are. And then go out today and be the best version of yourself as you love yourself unconditionally. And even say to yourself, darling, I'm here for you. And be there for yourself as you take a step towards love. And then send metta out to all your loved ones. I'm sending it out to all my loved ones, to all of you, to my friends Joyce and Carol, who've been here with me from the beginning. And we have people all over the world. Paula came from the Netherlands, and so many of you. So today we're going to have love, connection, and passion, starting with Ariel in another 30 minutes. Then we're going to have this succulent wild relationships at 2 o'clock Central with Sark and Dr. John Waddell. And at 4 o'clock Central, we're going to ignite passion now. So sending you all my love, looking forward to seeing you very soon, and come back, and we'll continue on this day of love. And I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.